Okay, Mark, you addressed this right at the beginning of the book, and one of the biggest criticisms of policy in the area of Indigenous affairs is the amount spent compared to the results. So what do you think? Has too much money been invested, not enough, or just invested poorly?
There is many, many issues on the ground, and these issues are often closely related, and the government response is really, I think, in terms of the quantity of money, it is fine. I wouldn't say that that's the issue. It's really how the money is spent and how it gets divided up into so many programs and the machinery of government that's involved. People typically think of there being one or two policies in Indigenous affairs, which are often the ones that are being trumpeted in the media. But in reality, there's many, many policies. And if you're in a remote community, you see the effects of all of these policies, because every policy takes the form of a different program. So you can have a community of less than 1,000 people with 80 or more programs coming in.
And is that part of the problem, do you think? You address this in the book as well, is that there's so many different programs and grants overlapping each other, and they're always chopping and changing before a real chance to see if they actually work properly or not?
Yes. The book is making the case for local innovation as opposed to a plethora of policy solutions. To bring this down to a practical level, one of the more a common target group is disengaged youth. So you might have 50 youth in a community, and often there'll be 10 programs. So in the one fortnight, an individual can have 10 different programs. Each of these programs can have a different theory of change and different objectives and be pulling the individual in different directions. And when you're confronted with that, you start to realize, well, this isn't making any sense. I mean, all these programs have got their own measures, but because they don't account for each other or necessarily even coordinate with each other, what they're measuring isn't particularly useful in terms of whether they're achieving their stated outcomes. So we really need to look at something else, I think, other than these this constant pursuit of solutions from the outside, and look at what else is happening in communities. And you often will find really interesting innovations, and people are somehow finding ways to work within the system, again, often against the odds. We need to be looking at how policies can be enabling that innovation.
I mean, it seems like a central theme of the book is the disconnect between these policies that are approved in capital cities right around the country and what's actually happening on the front line. So how much of that is a problem, I guess, when rolling out these sorts of policies and projects?
I think it's a massive problem. I mean, it gets us so much easier with the reporting frameworks. It gets a lot easier to just tell people what they want to hear. So the people on the ground aren't necessarily don't have good channels to be reporting on the innovation that is going on. People, the different programs and grants, they're just really looking to hear about their piece of the picture. They're not interested in hearing often about the other things that are going on. If we look at this innovation and how we can actually be fostering it, one of the things that's absolutely critical to this is a very simple thing: stability. Regardless of the ingenuity of the particular policy, if it stays still for long enough, typically, people can adjust to it and we'll work something out around that policy. And there's a very good story of how that occurs in the book at Ali Kurung. But we typically change these policies so frequently that people don't have time to adjust. So that, I think, is a very practical example where stability keeping things still long enough is probably as important as how smart the policy solution is.
And being on the front line, how hard is it to sort of straddle between the two worlds of policy directives coming from Canberra or wherever else and you know, harmony and working with Indigenous communities?
It's incredibly difficult, and I think that goes to another point that I really want to make in terms of how to enable this innovation, is we really have a capability problem. A capability problem with the typically non-Indigenous people that are going to work in communities. There's so much in Indigenous affairs which is looking at how to build capability of Indigenous people and Indigenous organisations, but we don't look at the capability of non-Indigenous people as well. So half of the universities in Australia offer tertiary qualifications in development studies. So if you go to work in overseas with on an aid assignment, you can arm yourself with a master's degree, and you can typically you would learn some language and you would study the context. Well, that just doesn't happen at all in Indigenous affairs. People will have their particular technical or professional area, but they don't do any sort of induction training, or they don't have any support networks typically. So they get there, they make it up as they go through the school of hard knocks, and there's typically a very high turnover. And Indigenous leaders often become a little impatient with the revolving door of new recruits. So there's a real problem of capability and professionalisation of the people that are going to work in communities as well.
All right. Mark, thanks so much for talking to us on 2SER this morning.
Thanks, mate. See ya.
Cheers, bye. Mate.